This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne.
Yes.
And this is the place on this beautiful Monday to hear about local goings on in the Mid-Willamette Valley. Here, where you get to hear about ideas that are local and initiatives and institutions and all that stuff. This is the place, right?
Let's rattle them off.
Hey, welcome. It is Monday. There's so many things to talk about. Some things in the news we've been holding back because we had so many great guests and so forth. So today in this hour, by the way, don't let me go another minute without thanking you for listening to Local Talk Radio, for supporting Local Talk Radio, and for your desire to be informed in your local community, and this is the place to be so. So we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate you supporting the sponsors that make Local Talk Radio possible. All right, so many things on the national scale that affects us, and there's parallels in the local scale. We've got some improvements and some progress in the police facility building. We've got the state trying to incentivize us to save for our children's education in the future. We've got we have one of the most unpopular governors in the nation. Did you see that?
Yes. She's like the third from the bottom.
Yes. Now, does that surprise anyone? Anybody no. wants to weigh in on your thoughts on Kate Brown? Give us a call, 503-393-1430. 393-1430. All right, let's talk about that real quick, shall we?
Sure.
Let's top of the order. I know the Newsmakers has been critical of Kate Brown. She seems like a very agreeable sort that you could hang out with. Now, she's not dislikable.
She's not sure.
Unlikable.
Sure.
She says unconvinced. But I, of course, have been critical of the lack of true leadership and, of course, of priorities. But we all have different priorities. She got elected, so it's right to go after it. But the lack of leadership is the part that really bothers me.
Yeah.
All right. The article says that she is one of the least popular governors in the country, landing at 47 out of 50. So the thing is, she's really, really popular, of course, in Multnomah County. And she has this huge rating. So the organization that put together this scale has scores for how people feel about her. And she's scoring a plus 58, whatever that means, right?
A plus 58.
It's a plus 58 with Democrats. But it's offset by her negative 73 among Republicans and, really importantly, negative 12 from independents, right? So you have Democrats really liking her, but Republicans really, really not liking her. And, of course, independents. If you're losing with the independents, you could lose the next election.
Mm.
All right. So here, let's put this in context. So the average for a Democratic governor in America is a plus 11. In the states where there's a Democrat, they're a plus 11. So compare that when she has a negative 4.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Negative 4, well below the Democratic average there. And so coming in last place, I know you want to know, folks, it's a Republican, Matt Bevin of Kentucky. I don't know why. Governor Bevin of Kentucky is in last place, but he is.
Probably playing a lot of golf and not working.
Also unpopular, Connecticut's Democratic governor and Rhode Island's Democrat governor. So you got three out of the bottom four in the nation are Democrats, and one's Republican trailing at the last. Interesting. Republican governors, they score pretty well. Republican governors... they're at plus 28 in their average. So overall, I mean, of course, there's more Republican governors in the nation than there are Democrats. But plus 28 for Republican governors on average in America, whereas Democratic governors' average is a plus 11, substantial. Big change there. I mean, more people are more happy with a Republican governor. Isn't that interesting? I wonder if it has anything to do with the governor's, I don't know, there's some perception, not so much in Oregon, but some perception that they're more, they're running their state. It's more of a CEO kind of vision, role
sure.
than it is a political role. I mean, they're taking care of the business of government. Maybe that, I don't know, maybe that's just my perspective, but it seems like to me, a governor has less typical partisan goings on overall than a state legislator, right?
There's right.
Meeting with a member of caucus all the time, right? So it's about the Democratic caucus and the caucus agenda, and then the governor's job just to run the state. And so there's a little bit more of a, and maybe, I don't know. I think we view Republican leaders as a little bit more businesslike, a little less
good way to put it. Yeah.
A little bit less driven by emotional public policy issues of the day.
Yeah.
Oh boy, am I profiling right there, right?
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something the truth hurts sometimes. All right. So that's,
you know, we need more of that.
Yes.
More
more
truth.
Profiling?
No, more truth. No, whether it hurts or not, we need more truth.
All right. Well, if she wants to get reelected, she better swing those numbers to the independents. As I will say over and over, it is the independents that that make the election winner.
This thing about Chris, Kay Brown, mm-hmm. she's a nice lady. I've met her. I've talked to her. It's the policies and lack of leadership. That's what's wrong.
Yeah.
Nice lady. Don't get me wrong. Personally, I don't have anything bad to say about her. It's just the policies that she's pushing and the agenda and the lack of leadership and fixing things that are wrong, like the foster system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would
for
add,
example.
Yeah, and I would add to that. I would agree with you, Dave, and I would add to that that she's not governing the urban-rural divide. She's
yes.
not managing that at all. She just thinks she's the governor of leftist Oregon.
Right.
She's the governor of Multnomah County.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So between her and the Speaker of the House, we have a very skewed public policy goals,
mm-hmm.
and it's not balanced at all.
No.
It doesn't even like try to placate the other side. So she's not a governor for the whole state.
No.
She's a governor for the left wing and Multnomah County.
Who pretty much yeah. elected her, by the way.
There's that. And, oh, well, yeah, it was Chris Dudley, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chris Dudley won every county in the state but three and lost the election.
Yeah, there's something wrong there.
Right?
Yeah.
So, all right, hey, we're going to take a break. Want to congratulate some people on a nonprofit victory and go into the police and also talk about the state encouraging you to save money for your kindergartner. All right? So stick
wow.
with us. I'm Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne. And we're talking issues of the day on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave. Presented by Les Schwab Tires. And sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place. And Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart. There are times here on Newsmakers where we like to shine a light on good things happening in the community, nonprofits doing great things, people's lives being changed, people doing kindness for other people in the Mid-Willamette Valley here. So I just wanted to congratulate Darian's Gift, our friend here at the show, Mary Louise Van Edit.
Oh, yeah.
She wrote, had an article in the Salem Reporter. And if you missed it, and it's easy to miss. It's a small item, but Darian's Gift was founded by a couple of people I'm familiar with, Craig and Abby King. And I actually coached Little League with Greg King, who was Darian's uncle, and Darian died at 6 years old of bone cancer. And so they founded a nonprofit to help families in this region cope with pediatric cancer, of which the DeHart family, as most all of you know, has a lot of experience in coping with childhood cancer. So Darian's Gift, they had a golf tournament. They raised a bunch of money.
Nice.
It's their number one fundraiser, I believe. But they raised in one day. Of course, there's people donating and there's auction and this and that and usual fundraiser such. But $67,000 was raised.
That's a nice chunk.
And that is a nice chunk. And I'll tell you, these families, especially if they don't have a lot of means to get some help when their kid goes into treatment for cancer, there's all sorts of costs. There's driving to Portland if you're going to OHSU and Dornbecker's. There's doctor's appointments. There's time off work. There's medications. Your maximum out of pocket on your medic on your if you even have health insurance and so forth. Anyway, all the little things add up. And so I want to thank Darian's Gift for supporting those families. It's everything from like, hey, we'll come over and do physical acts of kindness for you, to donating money or gift cards for your gasoline and things like
that. Okay.
Really nice. Really nice.
Nice stuff.
Good work, folks. Some of the people that's supporting these for the last 10 years, actually. Mike Murphy, a friend of mine, a great guy, South Salem. He's the manager, Les Schwab, down there by Walmart off a commercial. And he's been supporting Darian's Gift for 10 years. Court Street Christian Church, Great Harvest Bread Company, and Hopkin, Howerton, and Kennedy and Clark doctors.
Wow.
Those are dentists. Anyway, just some good people. I highlight those. Way to go. All right, moving on. Let's get rid of that so I don't start saying it all over again. Okay, we're going to save to the next segment because I think it'll take us a while to get through the whole concept of should you be saving for someone who's five.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the police building. Big news,
big ceremony.
Yeah, last week. They put the top on the thing. So they put the top on the thing and they capped the cost.
That's a nice parallel there.
Nice,
important.
Cost overruns. Tomorrow, hopefully, the mayor will be here. May not talk about this with the mayor because he's seeing all the numbers and he's seeing what's going on. But it seems like he's a little too comfortable with how much costs have escalated. Or at least in terms of, I mean, what can you do?
That's pretty much what he's thinking.
What can you do?
And we could ask him that.
There is the timing, and this is a double-edged sword, folks. So we as taxpayers, we got so much more than we bargained for 10, 11 years ago with the Streets and Bridges bond measure, right? So we're in the recession. We got so many more projects. We benefited from that. So many more transportation projects were done than there was in the original promise list because of the cost and the cyclical cost of construction materials. Materials and services. Now we're going the other way because everyone is so busy and construction costs and materials have escalated so much. What we originally thought and had scheduled to spend $42 million on, we just signed a contract to cap it at $54 million. That's a 25% increase, folks. That's a 25% increase. So having to cobble together other methods of paying for the cost overruns. Some of it's coming from transportation. Division Street there, if you've driven by the new police facility in its construction phase, Division Street, I believe, is going to go two ways. So there's going to be some transportation improvements along there. I don't think that's coming from the bond fund. That's a little unclear. $4.4 million in that whole kind of half block area to do some transportation.
Maybe urban development tossed in?
Well, urban development is another pot of money.
Right.
I don't think
the city?
Think so. I don't
know. So for them to develop the roads and intersections around it?
Yeah. They just put another $3.3 of urban renewal dollars into the project.
Mm-hmm.
And last year it was $2 million. There was $2 million last year. They just added another $3.3. So there's about half your shortfall right there, just in urban renewal dollars. I don't see a lot in the paper. And if we have time today, I'd like to talk about Les Zeitz, who's the publisher of the Salem Reporter, his commentary on small communities losing journalists,
right.
Losing journalism outlets. Really interesting. But sticking with this really quickly, I just don't see a lot of people complaining about the use of urban renewal dollars. Used to be we had a lot of watchdogs. And if you tried to use urban renewal money on a dollar of it somewhere where it wasn't predetermined by the plan in writing in black and white and approved, blah, 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 then people jumped up and challenged that.
Hmm.
And now it's like we talked a few weeks ago about going into the facility for homeless, right, and urban renewal dollars for what is effectively a housing and social service goal.
For
for the homeless when they were building homeless. All of these apartments. It was an uncompleted facility for, I think, extended care.
Extended care, yeah.
Great plan. I mean, it sounded really good. You're going to bring people off the street. You're going to have social services in-house. You're going to have laundry in-house, mm-hmm. you know, community kitchen or whatever else they had. I like the goal, but is it urban renewal? As a purist, I'm going to say it's not. The mayor will argue with me and say,
yes,
well,
he did, actually.
That does improve the neighborhood, and it was blight, or it was because it was unfinished and so forth. And
but then again, isn't homelessness a little blight?
The watchdog. Yes, it is. The watchdogs for
urban renewal.
The mechanism is designed to raise property values.
Didn't that raise the property value with redoing it?
If they built a homeless transition housing next to your house, would that increase your property value?
Good point.
Yeah. I don't know. Things that incentivize and leverage. Incentivize people to build, leverage local dollars to be an instigator, and therefore end up with an increase in base property taxes and a renewal. And it's a good tool. I like it, but some of these things stretch the definition.
And was that
like a public facility?
Yeah, that is
a public facility.
Not on the tax roll, is it?
No, the police will not be.
See the yeah okay.
Will not be on the tax rolls. All right, to just argue against myself, which I'm fond of doing.
Yes, yes, you did.
We did use public. We did use urban renewal to build the Civic Center. 40 years ago? Civic Center and the library was in the Pringle Creek urban renewal area. Right, and it did a remarkable job. That whole neighborhood, adjacent to the historic neighborhood, there along the creek, built a brand new Civic Center and a downtown and a city hall. I mean, we used to have city hall was a house over there. I think it was on.
So it definitely improved Chemeca. The Blythe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's not many, that many politicians in the building, Dave. Not that many. Anyway. So the police facility, they've got the top on it. So a whole new stage of construction coming. So. That's exciting. Some of the police officers, including Chief Jerry Moore, were there, and they started getting excited because they could start to see the spaces that they're going to be operating in.
So that's where my office is going to be.
And this is where we're going to store our bikes, they were quoting and saying, like, okay, we've got these offices that are around downtown corridor, especially on bikes and so forth. And 114,000 square foot building. Yeah, and most of the time, it's the article's like, mostly it's been in the news because of its costs.
That's not a good reason to be in the news.
No. It is a great investment for us, as painful as its cost is going to be, and as painful it is for the city to have to go through this cost overruns. It's going to be a great investment for Salem and going into the next generation.
What's an old building going to be done?
The police are right now in the basement of the Civic Center. A lot of people, if you haven't taken a tour, oh boy, it's scary.
act like you've been there a couple of times.
I've toured it a few times. Toured it.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Yeah, good.
Actually, when it was built, there was a small little holding cell down there. There was a little jail that was, I don't know if it was ever used. If it was, it was just while prisoners were being transported to Marion County Jail, okay. Of course. But yeah, I mean, it's dark. There's no windows. It's in the basement. It's literally in the basement.
Basically a dungeon.
A dungeon. And when you see, like, oh, there's this place that's the size of some people's walk-in closets, and 20 SWAT officers are supposed to get ready in 2 minutes in the space with these lockers, and it's just and they have to use outside storage because the space that's allotted for, like, evidence locker and chain of custody, it's small and cramped. And it's you'd have to be interviewing victims of a crime too close to ears, right?
You
didn't have the privacy. Yeah. There were so many things wrong with it, not to mention the fact that it wasn't built for as many officers as Salem needs. And let's not forget the seismic issue, that if there's a huge earthquake and that building starts to collapse, all of our law enforcement on duty right now are squished. Right, so completely unacceptable place for our public safety.
They basically love being on the street then.
Yeah, you would think. You would think. It's going to be a huge improvement. If you've ever toured it, you would have voted yes twice. To getting them out of there. The situation was, frankly, just an embarrassment. Mm. And it was, we could be so much more functional and more efficient and more safe, and now we're going to be.
State of the art.
We're going to be.
Right? State of the art.
Division. All right, we're going to take a break a little bit early and wind up. Next, when we come back, we'll start talking about whether or not you should be saving for a kindergartner to spend on education in the future. The state is encouraging it, and they're going to give you $25 if you do. And should the state be giving you $25? That's a question. Brent and Dave may not agree, so stick with us on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you in part by Color Tile of Salem. Welcome back to Monday.
I got to slow like welcome back. This is Brent DeHart. You're listening
wind
to
him
Newsmakers.
Up today.
Fire and ready to go. Hey, in the news, an incentive by the state of Oregon to give you $25 if you'll start saving for education savings for your kindergartner. So $25, saying basically open an account, you get a $25 fee. I mean, banks are doing this. Credit unions do this. A lot of times you'll see an incentive. Open a new account and you get a toaster back in the day, right?
Back in the day.
But now it's like, we'll credit your account $25 if you open an account and start saving for your kindergartner. Good long-term. I mean, I'm a long-term thinker and planner, so I like people who think a decade or two in advance. It's also really good for the public and the public dollar for everybody we talk about taking care of our own needs mm-hmm. and so forth. If they're responsible, and in the future, perhaps these people will be able to go higher education and get and buy any kind of education and get jobs and support themselves. So investing in the future, not a bad thing. Not a bad thing for the government to incentivize, I suppose. Right?
On the other hand,
Dave, what?
Is it really the responsibility of our government to do these things? I mean, that's the taxpayer money of $25 that they're incentivizing people to open up a savings account.
Very good point. I have a counter to that. So let me clarify. It's not a savings account. It's part of you open an account with the Oregon College Savings Plan. So you're basically investing in a tool that most people use for college. However, if you're a family in the trades, you can use these funds in the future for your kid to go to a trade school, to go to become an apprentice and so forth in the trades. So just about any type of education, career, or college you can use in the future. So it's Oregon College Savings Plan, commonly referred to a 529. And if you're a parent and you haven't had a financial advisor or your banker pitch you a 529, I'd be surprised.
So what's wrong with going to your bank or, you know, financial institution, opening up a checking account in your child's name with you as a cosigner, and starting a savings account when they're born?
Nothing's wrong with it. It's a good thing. I'm a big proponent.
So why is the government involved in it then?
Well, it's the college savings plan specific to these 529 plans, and they are education specific. So they're trying to promote education and they're trying to promote saving early. So 529 plan, as opposed to a savings account, it's allowed to grow tax deferred, actually tax free. All right. So let's run down the tool a little bit, folks.
All right.
So it's a 529 because we have to have either a three-letter acronym or a number for everything in government, right?
Sure. So it doesn't get lost.
529. So you open up in Johnny's name and then it grows. Let's say you bought some mutual funds that invests in American companies, right? And over the next 15 years, while your three-year-old becomes college age, it grows from your $100 to $1,000. While it's doing so, you make those extra gains, investment gains, and you don't pay taxes on them, right? So it is tax policy. It's pretty prevalent in America, tax policy to use in the future that is tax leveraged. Because if you put it in, if you just go buy a Microsoft stock and hope it grows for Johnny's education, if it grows, guess what? You're going to pay taxes.
So, every year?
As it shows in income or profit. So if it spins off dividends, yes.
Okay.
Or when you sell it for Johnny's education. However, in a 529 plan, and folks, I used to be an registered investment advisor. I'm not anymore. So I can talk about it. One of the problems, this is one of my favorite topics. It's just hard to get somebody on the show because they all have compliance departments. They all have, and they want to clear everything within it. And so it's hard to get a person to be able to have their compliance department allow them to speak at will on a live radio show. So I have the good benefit of having some knowledge, but not having a compliance department because I can't sell it to you folks. Don't call and ask.
good disclaimer.
But great tax benefits. One of my favorite things about the financial services industry is send less money to Uncle Sam. When I was helping clients, it's like, well, this, you're paying too much in taxes. I come to like, Mr. Client, you're paying too much in taxes. You can do this with investments. You can do this with insurance. You can do this with your employee benefits and so forth. And this is one of the things that public policy in America is promoting with tax policy that people save for the future.
It sounds like a good thing.
One of the beautiful things about 529 plans, if you're listening, folks, is when you open it, you open one up, you put $100 in it. You tell every relative you've ever met that, oh, I have a 529 plan for Junior, and you give them the account number because anybody can contribute.
Oh,
it's
nice.
It's a great way for grandma and grandpa, aunts and uncles to also contribute. They don't know what toy he wants for Christmas, and they're like, oh, can we put some money in this college fund instead? It's a very good tool for that, so the burden doesn't fall entirely on the parents. And, you know, Rich Uncle, right?
Yeah.
He could have a bunch of money he would like to contribute. Anybody can contribute, and there's not a test like there is for some IRAs. There's not a test of how much money Uncle Rich makes. There's not a test for how much he can give and so forth. So it's a nice tool. And now I'm going to cycle back to your question. No taxpayer dollars are used in that $25. They're actually, over time, they're recouping that $20. They're going to front it to you, but then they're going to recoup it with some sort of small account fees over time.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a little bit of switch, isn't it?
Yeah, you left that out when you said it.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
All right. So they did this last year. Let's talk about this. 3,600 Oregonians took advantage of this. And I think they're incentivizing anybody like 1 year old into kindergarten. If you open this account, you get $25. 3,600 Oregonians took advantage of that, and it cost the state about $90,000. But those accounts, those 36 accounts, and a lot of them started small, there's now almost $12 million in them.
What?
$3,300 on average. Each account has about $3,300 on it in just a year.
Dang.
So that is the start of something good.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I wish I had a wrench uncle.
So I share with you, is that one of the core functions of government? On the other hand, education... looking after the long term.
It's important.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a good thing to incentivize, especially if we're not subsidizing in terms of you and I paying for it.
Right.
A little bit of education, get in the news, have people start talking about the Oregon College Savings Plan and so forth. So, all right. So, in that 529 plan, basically, you take Johnny's account and you invest it, typically in mutual funds, but it could be in a lot of different things. It could be in cash and so forth. But typically in mutual funds, and it grows. And then when you cash it out, when he goes to school or when Susie goes to school, then you don't have to pay any money, any taxes on the gains it did for over the last 15 years or what have you. So they can use them for any educational expenses after high school. You can use it for grad school, you know, like I said, computer training, all sorts of things.
Okay.
So, good tool, folks. Look into it. Let's do the math.
Is it too late to use that for a retirement plan?
Yeah. Yes. And you need to save more than $25.
Dang.
Retirement plan's a whole nother segment.
Of course it is.
All right. Newsmaker listener, we like to think that you know more than the average person who doesn't listen to Newsmakers. So, appreciate that. Let's do a little math. Brent loves to do the math. So there's a parable in the industry about the two brothers who are 20 years old. They're twins. And one of them starts to save early in his life. He decides he's going to save. And he saves X number of dollars from the time he's 20 till the time he's 35 years old. You with me? We'll call him Johnny.
Okay.
So Johnny saves for 15 years.
Okay.
Well, and then Barry.
Okay.
He doesn't save at all. He's probably just drinking beer and chasing women in his
20s. Mm.
I don't know anybody else like that, but some
sure.
guys do that.
Yeah.
All right, so Barry doesn't save at all until he's 35 and go, oh, I better catch up with my brother Johnny. And he starts saving the same amount of money, but he doesn't save for 15 years like Johnny does. Johnny saved for 15 years from 20 to 35.
Okay.
Barry's going to save from 35 to age 65.
Oh, wow.
Right? 30 years, twice as long. Oh, wait. Johnny stopped saving when he was 35. He only did 15 years and he stopped.
What?
He never saved again the rest of his life.
Hmm.
They both turn 65. Guess what? Johnny has more money. Johnny has more money, and that is the power of time, folks. That's the power of time. That's why you do this for people as early as possible in life, as you get them into the savings habit, because there's one thing you cannot replace with investment returns is time. You can't replace it. So in that scenario, he saved for 15 years, but early in his life. And then over that, it just grew, right? Presumably mm-hmm. with your investment savings. And his brother saved for twice as long, but he could not catch up. Twice as long, 30 years instead of 15, not going to catch up because you lost your early years. Really powerful math.
Wow.
I've done a lot of talking with, you know, people just getting out of college, some of my kids' friends and things like that. I'm like, the best thing I can, or young clients, you know, best thing I can possibly do for you is get you in the habit of saving, that you always save and invest first and spend the rest. Save it first, spend the rest. And the people that do that early in their life, they're gonna be just like Johnny and Barry here. They're gonna be like, they're gonna look, turn around the office. They're gonna look at the family reunion's office and see everybody else who's about their age, and they're going like, "Oh, I'm doing fine." And everyone's worried about their truck payment, or not qualifying for their mortgage, or they haven't started saving for retirement, or they just had a baby and they didn't plan for it. All that. But people who got, oh, well, ever since I started working, I put this much into this tool and this much into that tool, and I spend the rest. And those are the people that are really successful. You can't replace the time. If you wait till you're 40 to start saving, you don't need to save 10% of what you make. You're going to have to save 15 or 20% if you ever want to retire the lifestyle where you're living.
I'm in trouble then.
Yeah, aren't we all?
Big time.
So don't feel like, oh, no, I haven't done it, folks. Nobody is, my experience, almost nobody is where they thought they were going to be or wanted to be. But that doesn't mean we
should have
some good habits. So,
what if you have none?
Well, you're going to be living on a Social Security check then. You'll be one of huge number of Americans that are looking at living their later years on a Social Security check.
Thank God the car will be paid off.
Yeah. keep mortgage payments.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, that's the Oregon State Treasury Department incentivizing you. If you have a young child, if you have some young children, not a bad idea, those 529 plans at all. Absolutely get a permanent life insurance policy, which is a whole other segment entirely we're not going to talk about today.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's actually pretty fascinating.
Okay.
Of course it is. It's really fascinating. Anyway, college savings plan or education savings plan. And the best part about it is tax leveraged. And grandma and grandpa can pitch in too.
That's a good thing.
Let's take one more break. We got one more topic. Yeah, we're going to talk about why the big tax increase is not going to go to the voters. And the things that happened that kind of blocked that route. How about that? I'm Brent DeHart here with Dave Warren on Newsmakers. You're listening to 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back, folks. We're wrapping up the conversation about the $25 incentive the Oregon Treasury Department wants to give t- to people open up a 529 college savings account. There was a piece in there at the near the end of the article. Salem Kaiser School District is cooperating with them in terms of letting parents know. So
that's nice to see them.
You know, telling, being part of the outreach and letting parents of kindergarten kids know that the thing is available and collaboratively working. And so kudos to that. Always like it when the state works with the local jurisdictions and vice versa. I think we all come out winners there. Okay. So there was a little tiny tax increase. Didn't we not see a tax increase go through this legislative session? $1 billion a year. The Student Success
Act. You call that tiny.
Student Success Act, as it's called. Also referred to as corporate activities tax, which is, if it were advertising, Dave, it would be fined by the FCC.
Right.
For deceptive advertising.
Yes.
Corporate activities tax. However, you don't have to be a corporation to get taxed.
Correct.
It has nothing to do with corporate activities.
Yes.
It makes it sound like, you know, some John Grisham novel, The Firm, or something with these.
Like only corporations, the big guys are going to pay for it.
The bad people. Anyway, corporate activities tax, Student Success Act. I mean, they must have whole departments in government that make up these things. That's right. It's called the legislature. All right. So a lot of times, this happened 10 years ago, as we know, it's Measure 66 and 67. It was passed by the legislature, and then it was referred to the voters, and the Oregon Constitution allows us to do that, right?
Okay.
And so if the legislature passes a, you know, a tax bill, it can be referred if you gather enough signatures and take, because frankly, the legislature did it to us 10 years ago with what became Measures 66 and 67 were originally, a House bill or a Senate bill. And it was referred to the voters and so forth. And that happens a lot. Especially usually by Republicans and Republican interests that think the voters should have a say, as our mayor says, right?
Yeah.
Mayor Chuck's like, if you're going to reach in your pocket, you better ask permission.
True. That's a good philosophy.
All right. So, and then this went right into the news right away. They passed this thing, and Rob Ferreras.
Who?
Ferreras. I'm sorry, Rob, for massacring your name.
You just totally massacred his name.
Lumber. Wrote a $1 million check. Just said, hey, we're going to refer this, and there's an initiative campaign, and here's $1 million. I don't even think they're going to spend it. I think they backed off on that and the industry groups, and it's just become too hard. And why is this enormous tax? And it's not just the size, folks. It's also a tax that has never been seen in Oregon before.
Right?
Right. Measure 66... 67, really, did create a tax. It did increase corporate taxes, corporate minimums. It did create a tax on gross revenues or gross sales. It's not related to profitability.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would call that a backdoor sales tax.
Because yes.
If you sold it, then we're going to tax you. If you sold it above this certain threshold, we're going to tax you. And there's that I would like to say audacity, but it's more of ignorance. It's more just flat-out purposeful ignorance on the policymakers' part that if there's this like arbitrary dollar amount that if you make this much in sales, therefore, you're rich enough for us to go tax you, right?
Yeah,
and in this bill, it's $1 million, which is not a lot of sales for anybody who has to support a small business.
That's true.
And especially, I mean, it's totally different. I mean, margins in the jewelry business are totally different than the margins in the grocery business. Margins in the car business are totally different than margins in the eyewear business, right? So $1 million of sales is a completely different situation, and just talking about construction and how much this new tax can cost them. All right. So why is it that this doesn't get referred to the voters? Well, they did all these, in my view, some dirty play.
Yeah.
Right? They changed the rules as they're passing the legislative bill. They're changing the rules about what you have to do to collect signatures. They're making it harder to collect signatures. Frankly, that pisses me off.
Yeah.
I mean, that should piss us all off. Oh, we're going to pass this. And while we're passing this, hey, nobody pay any attention, but we're... because we don't want you to challenge this, we're going to change the rules that exist in Oregon today about how you refer this to the voters. So they used to be able to email you just, hey, Dave, you're on our list. Let's email you a signature petition and you can sign it and send it back. You can't do that unless Dave asks for it now.
You have to ask for it?
You have to ask for it. So for them,
whose bright idea was that?
Somebody with a comma D after their name, I could tell you that. The same people who think the Student Success Act was a bright idea.
Oh.
So you can mass email these signature sheets, right?
Yeah.
Now they have to pay for postage, to either that or they have to be requested.
Hmm.
Right? So much harder. That's item number one. Item number two, and this one is, I think, possibly even worse. So they have the election. They put into the measure that if it gets referred, the election's in January. So that's a low turnout of January election.
Totally.
And so the Democrats think they have a better chance of beating back any repeal with a low turnout. But it gives lawmakers the authority to write the ballot title.
What?
The ballot title is usually written by the Attorney General.
Right.
How do you put into this bill that we get to write the ballot title and we're going to take it away from the executive branch? How does that work?
No. Wow.
I mean, if you're going to spend money on something, why don't you challenge this
as talk a complete, about overreach,
complete violation of the separation of the different branches of government? They said, we're afraid the Attorney General is not going to be favorable enough to us, so we, the legislature, get to write the ballot title for somebody else's initiative. Who referring your bill back? I mean, talk about a conflict.
Totally.
Unbelievable.
That is unbelievable.
Two huge things that they throw in there, a dirty pool. And then they placate, frankly, they placated about a lot of large entities and players. Nike, placated Nike. Mm-hmm. Car dealerships, and good for you, car dealerships. I mean.
Yeah, they've managed to get out of it.
They didn't get out of it. They have to pay it, but they get to pass it along. As well they should.
Yeah.
You want to buy this truck that costs $40,000, and then you get the invoice, and it's $40,000 plus 0.57%.
That's a lot.
Because this is the Student Success Act tax, right? At least they get to pass it on. We talked about how commercial contractors are going to be doing the same. Tips to restaurants are not going to be taxed, so that placates some restaurant lodging people, car dealership people, Nike, and of course the Portland Business Alliance backed off and went supposedly neutral. I like how the article says that state and local business associations agreed to remain neutral. I think that was only one, and they got in trouble with all of the other state and local business associations.
So why doesn't the legislature just propose a sales tax? Oh, wait. Oh. We all voted it down.
I thought that's not where I thought you were going with that, Dave. Why don't they do it? Because there's no leadership in the governor's mansion. Because it requires
it all comes around
comprehensive reform, right?
Yes.
Comprehensive reform, and we would need a governor that has a lot of leadership to be able to do that.
That's not there.
It's Monday, and you've been listening to Newsmakers. I hope you enjoyed the hour. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKM.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.